This Morning, America's First News starts right after this. When shopping for car insurance, consider this. GEICO has been saving people money on car insurance for over 75 years. So if you're serious about savings, it's simple. Go to geico.com. After 75 years, they know how to save you money.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This Morning with your host, Gordon Deal.
A border wall for Mexico. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka. On this Wednesday, January 25, glad you're with us, and here's what's up this hour.
When President Trump calls on the Department of Homeland Security today, he's expected to discuss border security with Mexico. It's not clear if he'll offer a funding plan.
The president fired a warning shot on social media last night to the city of Chicago about its spike in murders. Hear what he's promising if there's no new action.
The White House has taken action to kickstart two highly publicized pipeline projects, the Keystone XL and the Dakota Access.
And how to address your boss about your lousy performance review.
Making sure that you're in communication with your manager consistently. You shouldn't be getting a sort of surprise that you're not doing well. So hopefully managers will reach out to employees and keep them updated on how they're doing. But, you know, there's no guarantee that your manager will actually do that. So it really kind of is your responsibility as the employee.
Market Watch reporter Maria LaMagna on how to help yourself before that review, then tackling it head on. She's here in about 20 minutes. We're expected to learn more today about President Trump's plan to build a wall along the border with Mexico, as well as plans to ban people from entering the U.S. if they're from countries considered to be a terror threat. We get more from this morning's Mike Gavin.
Mr. Trump is scheduled to travel today to the Department of Homeland Security, where he's expected to lay out his border security plans. The Wall Street Journal says the entry ban is expected to include countries such as Iraq, Iran, Syria, Yemen, Somalia, Sudan, and Libya. With regards to the wall, some say it's a project that could cost upwards of $10 billion. It's not known where the money will come from. The president will also include an order aimed at punishing so-called sanctuary cities, where law enforcement officials offer little help to federal immigration agencies. Gordon.
Thank you, Mike. The Journal, by the way, also says the timing of the announcement has angered some in Mexico. That's because top Mexican officials are due to meet with senior members of Mr. Trump's administration to discuss security, migration, and economic issues. It will also come days ahead of a visit by the Mexican president. Another day considered pro-business in Washington, President Trump has put the wheels in motion for a pair of oil pipeline projects that had been rejected by the Obama administration, the Keystone XL and the Dakota Access, something that could be the start of the dismantling of former President Obama's environmental agenda.
Because they had inappropriately violated their own social media policies, there was guidance that was put out to the department to act in compliance with the rules that were set forth.
Environmentalists oppose the pipelines as part of a commitment to fighting climate change. Mr. Trump also added broader directives designed to ease regulations on infrastructure projects and ordered his team to figure out a way to maximize the use of American-made materials in U.S. pipelines. You heard White House spokesman Sean Spicer there talking about a media ban now for the Environmental Protection Agency as well. It's 9 minutes after the hour. President Trump is pressing the chief executives of the big three U.S. automakers to build more cars in the country and avoid investing in Mexico. Auto executives have a lot to think about these days, not just about how to improve sales, but also trying to figure out how to deal with the nation's new commander-in-chief. It's a story from Wall Street Journal reporter Mike Colias. Mike, set this up.
This has been going on for a while. It started during the campaign when Ford was the real target. Ford had been planning on a new plant in Mexico, $1.5 billion plant. Trump went after them several times, both on the stump and via his Twitter account. And on January 3rd, Ford actually backtracked on those plans. Now, there were some, there were business reasons for that. But they said, we're encouraged. This is a vote of confidence in where Mr. Trump wants to take the economy. So, from there, we've just seen kind of a flurry of activities with the president-elect, now the president, going after these companies mostly via Twitter, and they've been responding.
Before yesterday, had the executives met with Trump?
Yeah, just about all of them have. I mean, when the Ford stuff was going on, even back last summer, you had Bill Ford, the chairman of the company visit Trump in New York and sort of, you know, in hopes that he would tone down the rhetoric. And then more recently, you know, he went after GM early in the year with a tweet. And that later that day, GM's CEO, Mary Barra, was on the phone with Trump, sort of promising that, you know, just wait, we're going to have some investment plans. And they talked a bit about trade policy and currency manipulation. So, you know, one upshot for the auto industry and these executives is that they're getting some face time with the president, who seems really interested in what their industry is up to.
Is there a change, Mike, in the automaker strategy because of this?
I would say no. I think they're changing the timing of their announcements. Basically, what you've seen since the Ford decision on backtracking on this plant in Mexico is you've seen a handful of the biggest auto companies, so GM, Fiat Chrysler, Toyota, even Kia, has stepped forward with plans, you know, collectively worth billions of dollars in creating thousands of jobs. All of these things were things that were in the works, you know, had been decided in some cases months or even a few years earlier. They're kind of packaging all these announcements, tying a bow on it, and more or less stepping aside and letting the president take credit for him.
We're speaking with Wall Street Journal reporter Mike Colias. His piece is called Auto Industry's Number One Preoccupation, Trump. How does this work now that car parts are being made worldwide?
They are, yeah. I mean, the industry, even just in the past 10 years, has become exponentially more global. The supply chain, for sure. I mean, most of President Trump's interest seems to be on the assembly piece of this, so that the big automakers and where they're making their cars and importing from Mexico. But, you know, you've got this huge supply base that's firmly entrenched in Mexico and other places that ship parts to the U.S. I mean, it's been said that, you know, a one part might cross the border three or four or five times before it actually ends up in a car and is ready for sale. So it's very complicated, very intertwined. In, you know, GM, for example, I mean, they import from Mexico. They also make cars in Korea for sale in the U.S. They just last year became the first major automaker to ship cars from China and sell them in the U.S. So it's, you know, the auto industry has evolved because the regulations and things like NAFTA have been set up to allow them to globalize and take advantage of that footprint. And it's going to be a really hard thing to unwind if that's what the president really wants to do.
Any proof this will lead to more or better jobs?
Well, I don't know about proof. I mean, I think that, you know, the automakers, they want to build where they sell. It just makes sense for them. Sometimes they can't, because, for example, these small cars is generally what they're making in Mexico, not exclusively, but those are very small profit margins. Sometimes they're money losers, and it's a lot cheaper to make them in Mexico. And they can export them from Mexico to other countries without facing tariffs by using Mexico as an export hub. But you'll see the Detroit companies make pickup trucks and big SUVs because those are high profit products. They'll make them in the U.S. happily. They sell a lot of them here, and those, you know, the factories are very busy. I mean, that's one thing that's kind of gotten lost in this is it's not like the jobs are leaving. I mean, the companies have all added tens of thousands of employees since the downturn.
Thanks, Mike. Wall Street Journal reporter Mike Colias. 14 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
In business, risks and rewards come with every decision, like moving to the cloud with Office 365. While its benefits include anywhere access and lower costs, cyber threats and user errors can quickly wipe out data and the money you save. Barracuda Essentials for Office 365 provide an added layer of security and functionality for threat protection, email migration, data recovery, and quality of service. Move securely to Office 365. Visit Barracuda.com/essentials to learn more.
Hey, glad you could spend some time with us on this Wednesday. President Trump may be moving quickly on some top policy initiatives, but he's also still banging the drum on voter fraud in the November election and complaining about reports on the size of the crowd at his inauguration. That could hurt his messaging on what he's accomplished so far. On a day when Mr. Trump took action to ease regulatory burdens and persuade car makers to keep jobs in the U.S., the White House yesterday faced questions about the president's assertion on Monday that millions of people voted illegally on November 8th.
It's a belief that he's maintained for a while, a concern that he has about voter fraud, and that's based on information that's provided.
Press Secretary Sean Spicer says Mr. Trump's belief that large-scale voter fraud infected the election results is unshaken. Independent experts say there is no evidence backing up Mr. Trump's claims. We're also not seeing fellow Republicans taking up the cause. House Speaker Paul Ryan, for example, says he has seen no evidence. 20 minutes after the hour on This Morning, Jennifer Koshenka is here with more of America's First News.
Gordon, President Trump is expected to begin rolling out executive actions on immigration today. He'll start with plans for building a wall along the U.S.-Mexico border and other enforcement measures, such as targeting so-called sanctuary cities. Trump also is reviewing proposals that would restrict the flow of refugees to the U.S. FBI Director James Comey is staying in his job. A Justice Department memo lists him among officials remaining in their positions. President Trump criticized the FBI during the campaign for its decision not to recommend charges against Hillary Clinton. But he also appeared to warmly greet Comey at a law enforcement gathering over the weekend. Comey is in his fourth year of a 10-year tenure. Senate Democrats have unveiled a $1 trillion infrastructure bill they say will create 15 million jobs. And they challenged President Trump to work with them to pass it. New York Senator Chuck Schumer spoke at a news conference yesterday about the need to repair the country's roads and bridges.
This should be a measure to get the economy going, as we have done all along, whether it's Franklin D. Roosevelt or Henry Clay, before they even had Republicans who first proposed this. This is a job-creating bill.
Democrats released their plan ahead of a Trump proposal in order to pressure him to stick to his campaign promises. President Trump says he will announce his pick to fill the vacant Supreme Court seat sometime next week. The Supreme Court has had only 8 justices since Justice Antonin Scalia died last year. Rescuers workers pulled 5 more bodies today from the wreck of a hotel in central Italy that was raised by an avalanche a week ago, bringing the death toll to 23. 6 people are still missing. And Serena Williams moved closer to a record-breaking 23rd Grand Slam singles title with a 6-4, 6-3 quarterfinal win over Johanna Konta today at the Australian Open. Williams, who faces Mirjana Lucic-Baroni in the semifinals, was asked about 3 women over 30 making it this far.
It's really amazing. 30s is the new 10.
Sister Venus Williams at 36 is also a semifinalist and will take on fellow American Coco Vandeweghe.
That Mirjana Lucic-Baroni, she's been absent for like 18 years or something from this deep in the tournament.
She's had
a
very
right?
crazy story. She was abused by her father and she came on tour and had to drop out and have all kinds of issues, but she's not been this far also in 18 years. She
That's
was
amazing.
In a semifinal.
That's amazing. Good stories there. Thanks, Jen. 23 minutes now after the hour. Glad you're with us and a happy Wednesday to you. What happens if your performance review with your supervisor wasn't as rosy as you were expecting? Here's this morning's Jennifer Koshenka.
Get a not-so-great performance review? Don't run and hide. Tackle it head-on. That's the advice of career experts, according to Maria Lamagna of MarketWatch. Maria, first of all, how do you avoid having a you're-on-probation conversation in the first place?
Yeah, so that's a great first step, is just making sure that you're in communication with your manager consistently. You shouldn't be getting a sort of surprise that you're not doing well. So hopefully managers will reach out to employees and keep them updated on how they're doing. But, you know, there's no guarantee that your manager will actually do that. So it really kind of is your responsibility as the employee to make sure you're initiating those conversations and making sure you know where you stand with your manager, not just during your performance review, but throughout the year, so that if there's anything you need to fix, you're able to do it.
How often should you do that, and how should you go about doing it?
Yeah, so millennials get a bad rap sometimes for always needing feedback. So there is a danger, you know, millennials in particular, I think other people probably do as well. So there's a fine line. You don't want to do it too often and come across as needy or neurotic. So the experts that I spoke with said about once a quarter is usually the right amount, probably not too much more than that, just because, you know, you can space it out a little bit. That gives you enough time to set some goals and try to follow up on them. So once a quarter is kind of what you should be shooting for.
How do you go into that conversation and not say, me, 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 how am I doing, how am I doing?
Right. So it's helpful if you kind of phrase it as, what are the company's goals? What is the company trying to do in the next quarter? How can I be part of that? It's much better to talk about it in larger, you know, sort of more macro terms like that. You know, maybe you have an idea for a project and you want to ask, do we have budget to go in this direction, or are your goals, you know, a little bit in a different direction? So it's good to phrase it like that instead of just say, I want to do a good job. I think that'll be obvious by your coming up with good ideas for the company, but I don't think you have to explicitly say, hey, I want to have this conversation because I want to get a better performance review next time. It's definitely better to couch it in terms about the whole company.
So, Maria, you go in and you don't hear what you'd like to hear. Your boss says, you know, you really need to work on this and this, and you may be in trouble. How do you handle that?
Right. It's definitely better to know. So I think that can take the sting out of it a little bit. It's better to have the opportunity to fix it rather than, you know, eventually being terminated. So a good idea is to actually put that meeting in writing and maybe send an email to your manager after that conversation is over and say, thanks for your feedback. You know, we agreed to XYZ. If I complete this by this specific time, then XYZ will happen. So make that conversation as specific as possible. Make sure you get some, you know, very clear instructions on what you need to change, and actually put that in writing right out of, after the meeting, so that you'll have that as a record that you can refer back to in the future.
That's this morning's Jennifer Koshenka with MarketWatch reporter Maria LaMagna. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Transition seamlessly from presentation to meeting and from work to home with the Dell Latitude 13 7000 series, the laptop that takes care of business. The powerful performance and incredible battery life from this reliable business-class PC featuring Intel Core processors lets small business employees do their best work wherever work takes them. Learn more at Dell.com/radio. That's Dell.com/radio.
America's First News is online all the time. Follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show. Like us on Facebook or send us an email, thismorning@compassmedianetworks.com.
Thanks for being with us on this Wednesday, January 25. Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koshenka. Some of our top stories and headlines. We're expected to learn more today about the border wall with Mexico and limiting refugees. Trump tweeted a warning to Chicago last night about doing more about its murder rate. Anti-abortion group out with a video that purports to show Planned Parenthood rarely offers prenatal care. Apple being sued over texting and driving. Michigan football to pay three assistants $1 million a year each. And snake hunters from India lending their skills to Florida. That story in about 20 minutes. President Trump inherits an economy in much stronger shape than at either of the past two inaugurations, but major questions loom over how he can boost productivity and deliver on his growth promises. For example, Mr. Trump says he wants to see 4% growth for an economy that has not enjoyed even 3% growth in more than a decade. Here's Wall Street Journal economics reporter Nick Timiraos. Nick, what do we have?
Well, so if you look at the economy that President Trump is inheriting now, and you compare it to where we were at this point in 2013 or 2009, obviously the economy has recovered from a cyclical standpoint. The unemployment rate is way down. The number of people filing for unemployment insurance every week is, you know, a near 40-year low, or more than that. So, in one sense, the economy is doing much better. The challenge, of course, for the Trump administration are the same challenges that have been present for the last 10 years over how to boost productivity and really increase vitality for an economy that has been less dynamic. The rate of new businesses being formed has been declining. The rate at which Americans change jobs has been declining. And so those are kind of long-run challenges now. And when Trump says that he wants to see 4% growth for an economy, you know, we haven't seen even 3% growth for more than a decade. So he's going to face some of the same challenges that have dogged past administrations, including demographics, an aging workforce, but also some new ones like a stronger dollar that could undercut his push to boost manufacturing, because a stronger dollar is going to make American exports more costly abroad.
All right, so how is he planning to address this? Do we have a feel about how he might try to accomplish these things?
Well, he's been very clear. I mean, his economic policy is to crack down on trade, to cut taxes and cut regulations, and those have been his points all along. But how far those are going to go to address some of these long run productivity challenges, it's not clear that the solutions match the challenges.
Mm. We're speaking with Wall Street Journal economics reporter Nick Timiraos about his story entitled, For Donald Trump, Challenges Lurk in a Sturdy Economy. You mentioned, too, these broader concerns over declining opportunity for large swaths of the country. Explain that.
Well, I mean, it was clear, you know, Trump tapped into something in the 2016 campaign about people wanting change, people feeling left behind, people feeling like the system hasn't worked, and so, you know, for as much as people in the media and elsewhere kind of sit back and look at these dry statistics that say, well, look, a 4.7% unemployment rate, the economy must be better, but people just aren't buying that the opportunity, that, you know, that their opportunity is there, even if on paper the unemployment rate is low. It's possible that the quality of some of the jobs being created just don't match the quality of the ones that we've lost. And so, you know, the question now is really whether this plan to crack down on trade, to possibly impose tariffs on individual companies, and to slash regulations and tax rates can provide the growth boost. It's certainly likely to increase demand in the short run, but whether it gets towards some of these long-run productivity challenges is probably the hardest question and the most difficult issue for policymakers.
Thanks, Nick. Wall Street Journal economics reporter Nick Timiraos from Washington. 21 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Don't forget, by the way, that we can connect on social media. You can friend us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter with the username at This Morning Show. You can follow me directly there, too, at Gordon Deal. The next guy who's going to appear on the program, you can find at Radio Gavin 1.
All right, you got all that?
All right.
Hope you got your pen
Take
and
notes.
Paper out.
I know, that's a lot of info right there. Mike Gavin now with some of the other stories you'll be talking about this morning.
Good morning. Well, a man and his wife have been making some social media news after they were almost prevented from boarding a cruise ship recently because of their novelty house key. Henry Echevarria and his wife Lisa were stopped at security while attempting to board a Carnival cruise ship in Florida because of his gun-shaped house key. Henry and his wife, who both work in law enforcement, were told that they would be unable to bring the key on board due to a Carnival policy, which prohibits, quote, all firearms, including replicas, imitations, and their components. Henry argued the key was way too small to be used as an actual firearm, but was told he would not be able to board the ship unless he left it behind. Ultimately, Henry was forced to put the key in a safe, which made him uneasy about his own security, arguing that anyone can make a copy of the key and get his address from the company database. A Carnival spokesperson agreed with Henry that the key does not fit the company's definition of a replica weapon.
Why? Because, say, there's not a fake trigger that you can pull, or there's no opening something to
because it's like, yeah,
pass through.
And it's like an inch long.
Come on.
What I mean? I mean, it's a piece of plastic, basically. I mean, you have, you know, it's an interesting situation because you have two things that are happening in this country that sort of collide here. You have folks who are, you know, very proud of their gun ownership and very proud of their support of the Second Amendment and want to show that off to the world. At the same time, security, public security and vacation security, you know, and travel security is at all-time highs. So you have sort of two forces that sort of collide in a situation like this.
Right.
You know, a well-meaning security person trying to do their job and maybe being a little overzealous, and then you have a situation like this. Of course, he posts a picture of the key on social media with a ruler next to it showing that it's only like an inch long or something like that. And, you know, and then it kind of blows up into a social media situation.
Right. Trust me, the steak knives at the captain's reception dinner or whatever are more dangerous.
Much more dangerous,
yeah.
Yes.
Here's the thing. Don't outthink your common sense,
right?
For the cruise security folks,
yeah. No, it's, I mean, and it's tough too, right? They're checking in like, you know, thousands of people, right?
Yeah.
In a given day,
right.
Or, you know, and sometimes common sense goes out the window in the name of just trying to get things done, right?
Can we hurry this up? Because free drinks end in 15 minutes.
Right.
I got to get me to the bar.
Get to the Lido deck. And who knew that running to the bathroom between college classes could help your plants grow? That's what the University of Michigan is seeking to do, as it has installed a toilet and urinal in a campus engineering building that aims to convert human urine into fertilizers, a process that some have dubbed pee cycling.
Pee cycling?
Yes.
Very good.
Yeah, I'm sure those are most of the kids on campus that are calling it that. They say the waste will be treated and eventually used to create fertilizers that will be applied on the grounds of the school's botanical gardens. The Michigan researchers say deriving fertilizer from nutrient-rich urine could save money and reduce pollution. They also say that visitors to these special restrooms won't find anything out of the ordinary when they look to do their business, saying that they tried to make the experience, quote, as normal as possible.
Hmm. Okay. That just strikes me as maybe not so much in college, because you don't really request permission to leave class in college.
Okay.
Right? But if you're raising your hand, the new phraseology would be along the lines of, may I be excused to go fertilize the plants?
Right. Yes. The new euphemism.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And might the University of Michigan be leading us all to eventually just pee outside? Right? On our plants?
Yes. Yeah. Some. You know, I'm no...
Save water.
I'm no botanist, but I think doing that on your plants is not directly onto the plants without going through some sort of special process.
Perhaps.
Probably not a good idea.
Hey, neighbor.
Yeah.
I see what you're doing there.
Right, exactly.
I came out to do the same thing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So, someone's going to say, Gordon Deal told me that this was a great way to fertilize the plants.
13 minutes now in front of the hour. On This Morning, America's First News. It's 8 minutes now in front of the hour. On This Morning, Jennifer Koshenka is back with more of America's First News.
More than several hundred people rallied in downtown Seattle to protest President Trump's decision to advance the construction of the Dakota Access oil pipeline. Activists say Trump's action yesterday is a rebuke to their efforts to protect the Standing Rock Sioux tribe's rights, water supply, and sacred sites. In California, Congressman Jared Huffman also denounced Trump's moves to restart the Dakota Access and Keystone XL pipelines.
Apparently, millions of people all over this country, all over this world, marching, speaking out, was not enough to get through to Donald Trump and to the oil oligarchs that are gradually taking over our federal government.
The Dakota Access Pipeline is almost completed, while the Keystone Pipeline, which is to run from Canada to the Gulf Coast, has not yet started. The Trump administration has instituted a media blackout at the EPA and barred staff from awarding any new contracts or grants, part of a broader communications clampdown within the executive branch. The prohibitions came to light as the agency moved to delay implementation of at least 30 environmental rules finalized in the closing months of President Obama's term. Jesse Prentice Dunn is with the Center for Western Priorities in Denver.
This is an area where words matter, and folks in regional and local offices are wondering what the Trump administration means when they say they want to freeze on all contracts and grants.
President Trump signed a directive shortly after his inauguration on Friday, ordering a regulatory freeze pending review for all federal agency rules that had been finalized that have not yet taken effect. President Trump tweeted that he's ready to send in the feds if Chicago can't reduce its homicide figures. He didn't offer any specifics about how the government could help. And apparently, my cat is just as smart as your dog. Scientists in Japan have found that cats are as good as dogs at certain memory tests. The team tested domestic cats on their ability to remember which bowl they had eaten out of already and which remained untouched after a 15-minute interval. They found the cats could recall what and where information about the food bowls, suggesting they had episodic memory. They also found that cats can match dogs on various mental tests, including responding to human gestures, facial expressions, and emotions.
And
what, your cat's not as smart as your dog?
No. No. Get down. Dog understands that. Cat does not.
The cat just chooses not to listen.
Fetch. Cat does not understand.
No, they
dog
understand.
Dog does understand.
No, they understand. They just don't want to do it.
Cat chooses just not to get sweaty during exercise.
Exactly. They're smart.
6 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Hey, Glitch with us. The problem of big snakes in the Sunshine State has gotten really bad, so the Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission has tapped two snake hunters from India armed with tire irons to find and get rid of Burmese pythons, which are wiping out small mammal populations in the Everglades. A conservationist in India told the Miami Herald that it's probably the biggest invasive reptile problem that has ever existed on the planet. Yikes. Florida holds this annual python challenge, but apparently that's not enough to control the population. The two hunters from India are in their 50s. They come from a famous snake-hunting tribe. Fox News says they go after the snakes around boulders and in the thick brush. Instead of focusing on roads and levees, they look for clues like ripples in the sand or a tunnel through grass. And when things get slow, they stop to sing a prayer or smoke a cigarette. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koshenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News.